thanks to Krishna, human beings have been given, and it's referred to as a gift. We've been given the spark of self-consciousness. We can think. And we can think about ourselves, the world. We've also been given the gift. This takes a lot more philosophy than we have time to go into, let alone so-called occult history. But we've also been given the gift of spiritual discernment. Spiritual discernment. The ability to tell what's spiritual from what isn't. We've been given reason, which is the ability to concentrate, to sort out, to unify, to classify. And we've been given a will, which is what keeps us moving. You know, we may not think of our will very often, but if it wasn't for our will, we'd just be stationary all the time. So we have a will. One sage said that if human beings took the will they're using every day just to get through their day, if they took that same will and applied it solely to wanting to know Krishna, they'd know him in no short time. But our wills are these spiritual faculties that we have, which because of modern psychology, which is still 5,000 years behind what Krishna taught, and more than little less than that behind what Buddha and the Buddhists taught, the day will come, maybe in some of your own lifetimes, when the psychology of consciousness becomes known on the level it was known thousands of years ago by those who had plumbed it, explored it, and mastered it. So these powers we have of discrimination, of reasoning, of having intentions, of willingness or willing that, these powers are all gifts. They're all gifts. We didn't do anything to get them. You know, we didn't go out and earn them. We might have learned how to exercise some of them. You know, oh, I have a mind, I can think. Cool. You know, well, that's good. That's nice. But it was a gift. You didn't do anything to get it. And these gifts, says Krishna, were given to us solely for the purpose of seeking the spiritual life. But instead of using it for that purpose, we've used these gifts, the above-mentioned gifts. We humans, over thousands of years, have used these gifts for self-aggrandizement, for making our own little trip a little bit more like we think it ought to be. Collectively, we've used these gifts to subdue other peoples. So this is like we've been given this incredible gift that allows us to move toward Krishna, toward the ultimate source of all things, which is in our own heart. And we've misused this gift in the name of identification, self-identification, with what's called a psychophysical matrix. That is to say, when you and I use the word I, we're usually referring to a body and a set of psychological characteristics. And it's the identification of the I with that psychophysical matrix that keeps us from knowing the Krishna. Krishna says, I give everybody what they want. Everybody gets what they want. He says, those who want me, they won't get into this. It's just not a matter of mere wanting, but those who want me, come to me. He says, those who want money, everybody's worshiping. That's one of the contexts of the Gita. Everybody's worshiping. Worshiping is not a matter of going to church and getting down on your knees and doing something called worshiping. Worshiping is any use of the mind. It's any focus of attention. You're worshiping. You're forming a relationship with something when you think about it or feel about it. So if I spend a lot of time thinking about money, for example, which is fairly common in this culture, I'm forming a relationship between my mind, certain aspects of my mind, and a bunch of things called elementals that have to do with the metals of the earth. So I'm actually worshiping a bunch of elementals that have to do with metals. And if my worship is strong enough, I will get what I want. I might be worshiping the fickle goddess of fame. I'll probably get what I want. If not this life, another. To put it succinctly, Krishna says, those who worship the gods, go to the gods. They're gods. Gods exist. Some clairvoyants see them. Different planes. You know, gods and goddesses, you know, the physical universe is like the tip of the iceberg. The tip of Krishna's iceberg. There's so many planes of invisible being. And they're all manifestations of Krishna. And none of them are Krishna. You know, if you get you go into some kind of high meditative state and you get a picture in your head or a vision of Krishna, it's not Krishna. It's a vision in your head of Krishna. Krishna doesn't have a visage. He's beyond all that. He's beyond any image. He's beyond any name. And yet, he has something for everybody. The flute of Krishna, it said, is hard to hear, as I said, because our ears are attuned to earthly sounds. And so Krishna says, if you want to hear the flute, it's going to take a little work. You know, this is where a lot of people stop listening. Work? Well, I know about work, 8 to 5. You're telling me in addition to that there's further work? Yeah. If you want to hear the flute of Krishna, apparently, you have to learn how to still the mind. That's work. If you don't think it's work, try it. Try stilling the mind. And if you try stilling the mind and fail, says Krishna, don't give up. Keep at it. One of the main teachings of the Bhagavad Gita lies in the word practice. I can't keep this mind quiet. I just tried. Well, try again. Keep trying. Pretty soon it might get a little quieter. Pretty soon there might be a little gap between the thoughts. Certainly your mind's quiet in deep sleep, but unfortunately you don't get the benefit because you're not aware of it. And so the mind needs these faculties that we have, these spiritual faculties of will and discrimination and reason, they're given to us by Krishna because we live in a world of variegated forms, which are very chaotic and full of imperfections.